This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with purchase.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, Taryn's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taryn and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see. Taryn's update for Survivor.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Survivor update for week 10 of the Winners at War Survivor season. I'm your host, Taryn Armstrong, and this week I am joined by the amazing Aman. How you doing, Aman?
I'm so happy to finally talk some Survivor with you and with the rest of the fans. I don't typically do Survivor. Big Brother's more my shtick, but Survivor's always been the best as well. So I'm super excited. And I'm glad that like an episode that's so dramatic and chock full of emotion is like saved for someone who is so dramatic and chock full of emotion. It's just perfect.
What would be your reaction if your sister showed up on the island?
Yeah, like, look, y'all have no idea. Like, it would be prime time. Like, I think Survivor has won a few Emmys here and there. I'm not sure how many, but we would win an Emmy for that episode. I'm just letting you know, if there's anybody that's on casting or part of production, hi.
All right. Well, we are here to go through this week's episode of Survivor in with a fine tooth comb to really find all the details and talk over everything that we need to. And I will say for this week's episode of Survivor, this might be one of the shorter podcasts we do because while there was still plenty there in the family visit, it took about half the episode, and I am more of a strategy detailer than I am a family visit detailer. There's not going to be as much to say about the family visit. An interesting episode, though. I will say I've seen a lot of complaints about the family visit, that it took too much time, that, you know, I got a lot of on Twitter, especially I got a lot of like the typical like, they've been there for 20 something days. What are they being so dramatic for? Which I feel like if you are a regular Survivor watcher, like you understand that, that it's more than just being away from your family for 24 days, which by the way, still a long time for most people.
It's 3 weeks. It's almost a month. It's a long time.
Like that's a long time to be away from somebody. Like you can like be immersed in an entire new world in a month's time. And you are on a show like this. You are completely removed from your everyday life. You have entered a separate world where perception is reality and you can't trust anybody. And to see your family show up, especially because it means a lot to have your family be able to come on the show. These things are emotional. You could be away from your family for a week playing a game like this and get emotional seeing them. There's just something about being in an environment, where everybody is out to get you and seeing somebody that you know you have just full trust in, that you can just fully melt down. It breaks the dam of like stress and anxiety and everything that's been pent up in the time that you've spent playing the game.
Yeah. And I mean, compounded with the fact that this is multiple time, Tom is playing for almost all of them, because they're all winners. They've all played before. So there's like a huge sentimental weight to it, you know, when they, because they brought their entire family out there this time, for not all of them, but quite a few of them. And they get to share this experience with the people that they had to leave, with the people that gave them the grace and the permission to do it for a second, third, or fourth, or fifth time to begin with. So it's, you know, it's a huge moment. It's such a landmark season. And, you know, they have to leave their family only to know that their families are going to get to spend a day and have that experience with them. Like, you know, it's, you know, anybody would, I mean, I get that there are a lot of people out there that are more interested in strategy, but this is such a landmark season, guys. Like, this is good. That was a good thing that we got to see. And I'm so glad that they gave it to the Edge of Extinction people too. It was just perfect. I mean, I cried. Like, I cried at all the family visits, but this one really, I mean, especially given the circumstances with everything that's going on with COVID-19, just, you know, having people in your life that you love very dearly and having those close relationships is so invaluable. So it was a great thing to see. I loved it.
I agree. And, you know, I'm usually not the person that's down on the family visit. I mean, I'm down on the challenges. Just get rid of the challenges as far as I'm concerned. But family visits, I'm mostly fine with, especially this one. I did enjoy it, you know, I liked that this really was, and Jeff says this on the episode, he says it in interviews afterward, this was a thank you to the players. It really was a celebration of them and who they are as human beings, and allowing them to get their families on the show and experience the, you know, what it's like to be there with their families. It meant a lot to all of them, and this is Survivor. They are the winners. They are the representatives of the show, and this is the show giving back to them for 30 minutes. And I'm okay with that. I'm more than okay with it. I think that's fantastic. It did cause issues with the pacing of this particular episode, and we'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. But I don't want this to go away. I mm-hmm. don't want this to have not existed. I really enjoyed that this was here. It really did feel cathartic, and it felt right to be able to celebrate these players and these people on the show.
It was, I mean, obviously the critique about some of the strategy being, you know, watered down. Yeah, that happens. But here's what I'll say. Y'all have 40 seasons of this shit now. Okay. You get strategy so many times, so many times. Just 30 minutes out of all of that time just to enjoy. And like the fact that some of the family members that came to see them were also past Survivor players. There's just so much lore, so many layers. Just like, I get it. Like, this was a very confusing episode for everybody towards the end. I get it. I spent like at least an hour trying to figure out, like, I was writing down, like, I get it. But at the end of the day, it was a thank you to the players. It was a celebration of 40 seasons. And I am fine with being confused about one vote for one episode of Survivor. And I'll take that if that means that I get to watch 30 minutes of these players like getting a moment for themselves. So,
yeah. So most of this was just your typical family visit. There wasn't a ton of, you know, stuff worth pointing out. I think, Jeff was just really, when Bobby shows up for Sophie, he gives her a big hug. Jeff's like, that's a hug right there. And then he says again, like, that's the kind of hug you want on. Like, he was really into the Sophie Bobby hug.
I love how Jeff is just a commentator through and through. Like it doesn't matter if it's game. It doesn't matter if it's like a tribal council. Right on down to the family visit. It's like, you know, here comes the wife coming in for the up. There goes the hug. Like, he just can't. he just can't stop himself. Like, I need him to commentate, like, me getting up in the morning. I just need it to happen.
So something that apparently happened that was cut out of this episode, unfortunately, was that for the immunity challenge, Jeff had to, or maybe it wasn't this episode, maybe it was a different episode, but at one point Jeff had to, like, put together the immunity thing, and it wasn't fitting, and so the players started commentating like they were watching Jeff on a challenge. Like, oh, Jeff really struggling with this one.
Yes, let him have it. Yes.
I really wish we had seen that out. Anyway, Sophie had another interesting moment to me, I felt, where she was talking to Jeff about, you know, seeing Bobby. She's getting Bobby out here. He's such a trustworthy guy. In particular, like right now in particular, like in this moment, when I feel like even the people I like out here, I don't know what to make of them. I don't know what she meant by this. We've seen so little of Sophie over the last few episodes. We've seen her name pop up a lot from the other players. I wonder where she stands. This seems like the kind of statement that somebody who is very much on the outs, the underdog, would make. But as we see later in the episode, that's not necessarily the case. And so I'm really curious about what this comment meant, if it meant anything.
Yeah, it did give me pause too when I heard that, because you do have to wonder. It's like, okay, so how do you feel about? I mean, the family visits are always interesting because I think that it does open up the players, and they will be a little bit revealing about how they're feeling about everything, and then it really gives you pause. It's like, ooh, do you want to be too revealing? Because you know, there's a game that's going to happen at the end of this. You know what I mean? And this is before they found out that it wasn't going to be a competition. You know, so it did make me feel a little strange. But it also could just be her speaking in general, like, hey, like, at the end of the day, it is a game. And even if I am aligned with this, that, and the third, am I aligned? Like, who knows? It's Survivor. And it's $2 million this time around. So, who knows?
Yeah. Overall, though, great moments with Tyson. You know, he was so great. Jeremy and his, let's go, as his family runs out. Tony just breaking down. Really great moment with Ben as well. I felt talking about, you know, his family and how they make him want to be a better man and a father and all of that. Denise, hilarious that she is so much shorter than
she's
both
so. Small
and daughter.
She is so small. I said, how did that come out of that? That's crazy.
You see, Sarah at one point says, my son is playing with the enemy, but it's okay.
It was so great to just see them all get humanized and just the game just like really melts away, and you're just reminded that they're all people, and to see their kids playing with the other, it's just like, oh, I loved it. I loved it. It's awesome.
Yes. So there was a secret scene with further family visit footage, which actually had a decent chunk of strategy content in it, so we'll talk about that now. So they go back to camp. There's no challenge involving the families, which again I felt like was good. I don't want to see a challenge, and also again this is a thank you to the players. But Jeremy is talking to his wife, and he says that he tells her he trusts Tyson the most. Tyson is the person he trusts the most on the cast, which I thought was a little bit surprising, but obviously not going to be any sort of lasting impact there, at least for now. Michelle talked about feeling like she was on the outs because she's the only single person. This is something that they talked about a little bit last night on the Know-It-Alls, where like they all have families and kids and everything. And then you've got like Nick with his fiance, I think, Sophie with her fiance. Yeah. And then like, you've got Michelle with her sister. And so Michelle's like the only single person there. And then also doesn't have kids, and it makes her feel like she's a bit on the outs. And I think that's a good instinct to have, because I think that they are correct on the Know-It-Alls that this could be a big disadvantage for her when it comes to a jury vote. We've seen this happen before where people like to vote for the people that are most like them. And so people that fall outside of the average age range and experience range are going to have a harder time getting votes from the jury.
Yeah, I haven't seen the secret scene, but that's very interesting to hear because, I mean, you think about it all the time, you know, like these players talking about their personal lives and their families and who they could potentially be bringing this money back to. And that does play a big factor. And of course, it's only compounded when Fiji Airlines flies your entire family out to the islands. And then now the other players can put names to faces. And I'm sure some of these players have already met the families of other people. So there's like this whole meta family strategy to this game. And yeah, I guess not having a family that's, you know, at least not well known in the Survivor arena could be a little bit of advantage because I mean, yeah, if you're going to give the money to somebody that makes it to the end. Yeah. I mean, you're going to be thinking about who you're going to be disappointing, not only them, but the family that you just hung out with on the island. So like, it's like, damn, like, do I really want to deny the win to Tyson and his daughter and his beautiful wife? Like, just like, damn, you know? So,
yeah. I was thinking about it just now as well. I think that it's possible that Michelle and Wendell are the only two single people on the cast.
Ironically.
Yeah. I'm not sure what Natalie's relationship status is. But at the very least, two of the very few people who are single on the cast. That's funny.
I'm sad that we didn't get a little bit more Natalie and Nadia content, you know, I mean, we saw a little bit of it. I mean, she brought her baby and everything, but I would have loved to have seen, cause we're not getting any Natalie content to begin with cause she's been voted out. But I was very pleased to see, Adam and his father. That was a great moment as well. It was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, we got that from Michelle. Kim is talking to her husband. She says that that everyone is playing hard. She says even the underdogs have good stories. She's worried about people like Denise, who took out Sandra. She's worried about people like Sophie, who she says is doing very, very well. So clearly, you know, this is, you know, she's very concerned about Sophie. Sophie clearly has a huge target on her back that people see how good of a position she is in, which is like good that they're recognizing it, I guess, but also she doesn't seem like she's in the best position in that crew. It seems like Sarah is actually in the better position, and yet it seems like Sophie is the one that continues to be targeted, which I think is interesting. Tony's talking to his wife. He says, I'm playing a completely different game. I did exactly what my wife told me. I'm on house arrest. I'm only here because of Baby Cake's advice. She told me that I had to calm down. That's what I've been doing.
Have you though?
I mean
she's more gonna so be able than, to watch this back.
More so than his other seasons, surely.
That's true. That's true. The minute that he walks out and his wife comes out and everything, and Jeff is like, yeah, we're finally getting to see a Tony that we've never seen before. And it's like, it doesn't really bode well for what you just told. If that's what he told his wife, if I were his wife, I'd be like, really? Because Jeff told us that you were still out here being Tony. But okay. I mean, he's there though. And this is a fantastic episode for Tony. So, hey, there's that.
Yeah. And then finally, Tyson has another nice moment in the secret scene. He says he's been dreaming of somebody coming to visit him on Survivor for 11 years, and being able to do it with his wife and child is one of the greatest experiences he's ever had. I know how much it meant for Tyson to have this moment. I'm so happy for him that he managed to, like, I know that he would have gotten the extinction moment as well, but like just the fact that that he was in the game for this, I think,
yeah,
really meant a lot. I'm really happy for Tyson. In my head canon for the season, the only reason Tyson came back into the game was to chill until the family visit, and I was like, I can head back to Extinction for a little while. I gotta come back for, you know, the second one. Then I'm gonna win.
Yeah, I mean, if there's ever a time for you to be in the game, it's definitely for this moment. And yeah, I'm glad that he got that moment as well. I was glad also that he acknowledged the fact that he was smelly, because I feel like we do not get to see that a lot of the time. Like, I would like these. I mean, obviously, you miss your family member and everything, and you're running to them in the dramatic way. But like, I know for a fact you asked about my sister earlier. I know for a fact that she would have been like, "Ooh, come on." I asked her to be embarrassed on national television.
I know a lot of them were like, "You smell so good," to their family members. they're used to people.
Yeah, that's called deodorant. That's called lotion. That's called hygiene.
Yeah. So we got the immunity challenge after. I mean, so we did also see. I thought a great moment with the families coming to extinction as well. Seeing the looks of realization. You know, Danny looks like she's seen a ghost. I don't know. Lots of great moments seeing, you know, Fincher with Parvati, seeing Adam and his dad, Natalie and Nadia, Ethan and his wife, you know, Rob and Amber with their kids. There's so many cool things going on there. I'm really glad that we saw it, and I'm really glad that it happened.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Somebody tweeted, I forget who it was, tweeted last night that shot of Ethan and his wife from the side with that flagpole. Like, I hope that they got a shot of that. Put that in your house somewhere, put it in your foyer. It's so, like, in black and white. It was beautiful. It was gorgeous. Gorgeous moment.
So we had an immunity challenge, and it's the one where you have to keep the letters on the thing as you go back on the thing. Tony wins it, and he's, I won a game of patience. It's his first immunity win ever. And he also got two fire tokens for this win, not just one, two fire tokens. And as we head back to the camp, Ben says, tonight we'll prove who's in control of the tribe.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly two separate groups going on right now. Tony has got his way into immunity for the first time, which is such a solid and impactful win for him. So good job for him on that. But yeah, we're down to the nitty gritty now, because final 10, two sides, who's going to be the one that comes out on top? Who has the most pull here and there? Who's going to potentially jump ship? Where what's going to happen?
Yes. And so we get to the strategy portion. There's basically one strategy segment. It's kind of a long one in terms of like individual segments, but very short in terms of what we usually get in total. And this is where I really did feel like the episode dropped the ball in a lot of different ways, because it does seem like this was a very important vote. That this is the situation where sides are forming, things are breaking up. You know, we saw that, you know, it was Wendell and Nick and Michelle, that and Adam to some degree, that were on the outs when the merge hit, and there's this bigger group that was taking them out. We talked last week about where we thought the group stood with each other. And actually we got it kind of right. I was saying Ben, Sarah, and Tony were together with Sophie there as well. And then on the other side, you had, you know, Jeremy, Kim, and Tyson with Denise there as well. And then ultimately you had Nick and Michelle somewhere in the middle there. And it does seem like it's these two sides came against each other, but I wanted to see more about why. Like, that was me guessing, that was me projecting where I thought it was based on like a close read of everything that we'd seen, and I feel like there was not enough explanation given as to where these sides came from, and how they developed and what the hierarchy is here, like who is running which side, if is there somebody running any of the sides, and it's hard to know. All we do know is that those two groups of people are very much against each other, with Nick and Michelle. Nick seems to be pretty firmly with the Ben Tony group that in fact Sarah says go run it over with the boys, and she talks that means Ben and Nick. So I'm assuming that Ben and Tony have kind of reeled Nick in. You would think that Michelle, who has an attachment to Jeremy, might be pulled in that direction, and maybe that's how we got these two sides of five. But it's hard to know how real the two sides of five really were when the vote played out the way that it did, and that it might actually have been a side of 6-4 with both Michelle and Nick on the Tony and Sarah side. But it's hard to know.
Yeah, it is really. You could tell, I mean, obviously they had limited time because of the family visit, but also you could tell that they sort of wanted to get to the Armageddon of all the advantages at the same time. So they tried to piece as many conversations together to form some kind of narrative, but it was still like, well, how did we get here in the first place? I don't know. I feel like I'm sort of surprised that Nick is, you know, I'm not surprised at all that Nick would ultimately, if he is at all, like, siding closely with Tony, because he seems to have been playing that kind of game all season where he has been trying to follow the, as Tony would say, the lions of the game, and then try and, like, I think Tony sort of, like, had it right when he said that there's going to be a bunch of lions, there's going to be a bunch of people that are going to try and pick, you know, be the hyenas and pick at the after effects. And I think that that's sort of like what Nick is doing again when it comes to this, if that's what he's doing. So it's a big mumbo jumbo. I just know for a fact that like Tony and Sarah are like here and everybody else is just like laying where they lay. You know what I
yeah.
mean?
Yeah, we did see in the previous episode that when Nick was really upset, it was Tony that had come to talk to him and kind of cool him down.
That's true.
And so that's kind of the only explanation we've gotten so far, as yeah. well as Sarah's comment about run it by the boys, that indicates that Tony might have been the person who was working on Nick. And if so, major props to Tony, because without Nick, this doesn't go through. If you had made me guess last episode which side of the fence Michelle and Nick would fall on if there were battle lines drawn, I would have said they would have gone with Jeremy and Kim because of Michelle's connection to Jeremy. Now we do know that Nick also, of course, has a relationship with Sophie from the original DeCall. But you know, who knows how tight they are at this point. Sophie has been voting against him a few times. He's talked about voting Sophie out, and he voted Yule out, who was close with Sophie. And so I'm not sure. Again, Sophie might have had something to do with this, but we've seen so little of Sophie at this point that it's hard to know, but we have seen that he has a close relationship with Tony, and so it seemed as though Tony is the one that managed to pull Nick over, and with Nick, it appears Michelle might have followed, but again, it's hard to know because we don't even know where Michelle lies at this point. Maybe we'll find out in the next episode, but who knows? Anyway, let's get into the segment. With all of that set up, Tony talks about how he has the bulletproof vest on, the immunity necklace. He's super
hyped
pumped
about that necklace. Good for you, Tony. Good for you.
Tony walks into camp. He's like hanging it. He's like giving it a kiss. He's like, yeah. And a bunch of people are congratulating Tony on his first win. I noticed that they cut to a shot of Denise kind of shaking her head disapprovingly as everybody congratulated Tony, which, you know, seemed to be like a deliberate move there by the editors. Denise is not on board let's congratulate Tony train. I don't know what it means yet.
She's
but.
Like, damn, I just got rid of Sandra. Now I got to get rid of your ass, too.
Yeah. He said, I want a slow and steady competition when I'm fast and sloppy.
He's really PR focused, like a lot of like personal records for him this season. But you know what? I'm all for self-improvement. So, you know, show your muscles real quick, Tony. It's all right. I mean,
Amon, are you a slow and steady or a fast and sloppy?
I'm a slow and sloppy. That's what I am.
Tony says, this is the power. I've got the power. And so Tony wants to try and, you know, this is an opportunity for the war to start with Tony being safe. That's a great spot for Tony to be in. Notably, again, you know, Jeremy had an had immunity. Kim had immunity in both situations. The, you know, Kim was certainly able to pull the votes toward Adam when she wanted to, but it wasn't when the war started. You always want the war to start when you're immune because it's the most dangerous part of the war. The war starts. That's when you're most vulnerable. If you win the war, then you're good. So if you're the one who's immune when it starts, you're in the best position, and that's where Tony is. And notably, this is when the war starts. He talks to Jeremy, and Jeremy says, "I want to split up Sarah and Sophie." Right away, Tony says, "No, Ben won't do that. It's Ben's fault, but that's not going to happen." This is a very confusing scene because why does Jeremy feel comfortable going to Tony talking about taking out Sarah? You'd think that everybody knows that Tony and Sarah are a pair, and yet nobody has talked about it thus far. They've talked about Sarah and Sophie as a pair. They've talked about Sarah and Ben as a pair, but not Sarah and Tony. And now we're getting Jeremy coming up to Tony talking about potentially taking out Sarah, at the very least, splitting Sarah and Sophie up. And I feel like at this point, it's just praise thing after praise thing for Tony coming from me, and I'm sorry for that, but I don't understand how him and Sarah have managed to get the target off of their back. Sarah's, and less so for Sarah, because she is attached to other people, but Tony seems to have been completely free of any sort of attachment here in any kind of duo scenario. And I don't know how it happened.
Yeah, I was trying to, I didn't look back on any of the other episodes after last night, but I was trying to think, was there ever a time where the two of them were throwing each other under the bus? That would have made their Cops R Us alliance so invisible right now. And I'm not sure how Tony is able to walk away with this, like, being absolved of the, of that relationship. And for, or maybe he has, and maybe Jeremy is, maybe it's one of those things where it's like, well, if you are still with Sarah, then you ought to think about not being with her anymore. You might want to think about blindsiding her, because I mean, look, hey, she's probably thinking about the same with you. And if you aren't, then let's get this ball rolling. But if you are, you might want to think about it. And we just didn't get to see the whole conversation. I don't know, but it was very strange.
Yes. And I'm seeing some people in the chat say that they feel like perhaps this was the wrong move for Tony, that he should have allowed Sophie to go home because that might have been better for him. Mm-hmm. I personally feel like I disagree with that, especially when, again, you look at these numbers. It's a potential 5-5 split. At best, you have a 6-4 split, but you have two of those numbers not particularly reliable, especially one of them. Like, if you allow Jeremy to take out Sophie, then you're now sitting at what is at best a 5-4 advantage, where your fifth is Michelle, who has a really close relationship with Jeremy, could easily flip over. Now you've lost the majority because you took out Sophie way too early. Sophie is definitely a problem for Tony, but I don't think it's the right move to take shots at his own side when his majority is so fragile at this point. Do you agree?
Especially, I mean, if you have... I'm sorry, I think we're talking about Sarah, so I messed that up in my notes. But I agree, especially if you have the immunity right now and you have the option of a majority, then you're gonna wanna stick with that. So I think it's a good move on Tony's part.
Yeah. So Tony kind of shuts Jeremy down. Jeremy says to us that he's by himself and it's down to the nitty gritty at this point, and he needs to split up Sarah and Sophie, that they are the danger. I imagine that what's happening here is this Yara tribe, the remainder of them, Sarah, Sophie, and Ben, seem like the really dangerous trio that I think they think Sophie is the one driving it, based on what we heard from Kim in the family visit secret scene, and based on the fact that hers is the name that keeps popping up, and they keep talking about how she's playing really hard. It seems like that's what everybody's worried about most, and that is what's helping keep Tony safe from that target. So Jeremy feels really strongly that Sarah and Sophie need to be split up, and that's what he's going to want going into tribal. Sarah, on the other hand, wants Kim out. Sarah approaches Tony, says, "I want Kim out." Tony says, "I'd rather see Tyson go." And as somebody that did a stream before the episode and guessed that Tyson would be voted out this episode, I was like, that's it. There it is. Tony wants Tyson gone. They're going to pretend it's somebody else for a while, but it's going to be Tyson. I knew it. I called it the first time he was voted out. I just have a Tyson sense. I just can sense the tragedy coming, and it's going to happen.
It's the kiss of death. You know, it's like once you're marked, it's sort of like hard to get out of that. Especially, I mean, with the advantage, Jeremy's advantage looming, it's just like, and now you're about to like not have the numbers on the chat anymore. It's just like, ooh. You're in the crosshairs. It was kind of sucky. And I don't even really know if there's any way for him to avoid that, other than of course like the whole thing with Kim's idol. But that's such a dicey situation. Like I hate that moment in the game where it's like, you know, that there's is probably you, and there's really very little that you can do. It's just like, what do you do? Like, how do you get out of that?
For what it's worth, I think that Tyson was the third choice for targets for that side. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that it would have been Kim, but Kim has an idol. And so I think that's why they weren't going for Kim like Sarah wanted, because when Kim has an idol, most likely she's going to play it for herself. Now, she's good enough to know that she didn't need to play it for herself, but I think that's why they stayed away from Kim. Then obviously Jeremy was the number one target, but he has safety without power, so when he leaves, it's not Jeremy. Can't be Kim because she has got the idol. Third choice is Tyson at that point. Although Tony seemed to have wanted Tyson a little bit more, and I'm sure that played into it as well. So Sarah and Tony disagree a bit. Sarah says Kim will win this game if we don't vote her out. She can win immunities. She's got everyone in their back pockets. And Tony's like, no, she doesn't have everyone in her back pocket. Maybe she can win immunities. They have a disagreement here, and Sarah seems really upset in her confessional about this. She says, this will end badly if we don't get this straightened out. This obviously does not lead to any sort of conflict in this episode. So I'm guessing that this has something to do with the eventual preview that there might actually be some tension between Tony and Sarah in future episodes.
Yeah, that was a bit too resolved for me when they were able to like have that conversation and then decide, okay, well, let's, you know, like, and they stop talking, and then later on Tony comes to her with the whole thing about Jeremy, and then she was just so quick to be like, yeah, I was just like, what? You were upset in that DR. What's going on here? So yeah, it's definitely, and then we get the promo information. I was like, okay, yeah, they're setting us up for another battle, and Tony's gonna go back to being old Tony. You're gonna have to eat your words, see your wife, honey.
So they seemingly agree on Kim in this conversation. That Tony says, okay, that's what we'll do. But Tony obviously would seemingly still prefer something else. And so, and this is when Sarah says, go talk it through with the boys. We see a scene where Jeremy says to Kim, hey, let's talk. And Tony uses this opportunity to say to Nick and Ben, the boys, hey, we should take out Jeremy. You see how he's playing with Kim? He was calling her to go talk. We got to take him out. He says to us that there's something fishy about Jeremy. He doesn't trust him, and he wants Sarah out, and that's no good.
Which is such a good move. Like, not just going for Jeremy is a good move, but I don't mean just that. I mean, like, having all of them be present to watch what just happened and then be like, you know what? Let's do that. Like, shiny new object. Like, I feel like that sort of, like, you know, quick alliance real quick while they're all present to see the supposed betrayal or fishy behavior, always works wonders in games like these, because it's just an easy way for people to come together really quickly. You don't need to go around and explain, because you already have the majority in three. So I thought it was a good move for him to go ahead and try to swing that.
Yeah, and it makes it seem like you don't have an agenda. Like, right. Like this idea just popped into my head because, look, right. Did you just see that? So it doesn't seem like this is a carefully orchestrated plan where somebody's wondering, like, well, how does this benefit you more than me? It just seems like, Jeremy? Huh? they agree. Them three, Tony, Ben, Nick, plus Sarah, and Sophie. That makes five. They list out those five votes. They do not count Michelle as one of their votes. This is important for later on.
Following my notes.
Yeah. Then Jeremy, Kim, and Tyson get together, and oh man, this is so painful to watch on the second watch around, because it was like knowing that this is not gonna work out, but like this trio. Like, come on. Why couldn't it work? Amon, tell me.
Because it's final 10 and everybody is going insane. That's why.
Yeah. It's the Poker Alliance. They're together. They say the three of them need to stick together. They all don't have any friends out here. Kim is really running this conversation as well, which I
love. I was so happy, too, because she's had the reputation coming into this game as being the wrangler of chaos. Like, she can just, you know, everybody's running around like the chickens with their heads cut off, and she's sort of like the cool, calm, and collected one. That was like her mantra the entire season. And so when she finally stepped into her own and she was like, look, I feel good about this. I want us to be able to run this game. I think this is a solid group. Let's move forward with this. I was like, yes, that's the Kim I know and love. This is what I've been talking about. This is why I went so hard for you in the RHAP preseason content and all that. Like, I was so ready for this, but I think it's just a little bit too late. It's just a little too late.
Yeah, I loved it though. Like, Tyson, you have no friends out here. Yeah, I know. Jeremy, you have no friends out here. I think you know that. Yeah. I have no friends out here. We need to be each other's friends. We need to make this happen. So they list out us three plus Denise and Michelle. They list those five votes. They do not include Nick. They do include Michelle. They think that those five are attainable votes. Interesting to know. Kim also lets them know. Also, by the way, I have an idol. Let's vote Sophie. She won't see it coming. I've got this idol. We're going to make this happen. Tyson, though, he's worried. He says to us, he's worried that it might be him tonight. I'm like, I know it's going to be you tonight, Tyson. You don't have to pretend.
Yeah. Yeah, they had to put just a little something in there just so that when it does end up being him, we're like, oh yeah, okay, well, y'all saw that. It's like soften the blow just a little bit.
Yeah. So Kim goes and talks to Denise, and I've noticed this before, but just the fact that it happened again, like, Denise only talks game in one spot. Like, there's one spot, Denise really? Is always talking to people one-on-one, and it's always in the same spot. Like, they go to a spot where Denise talks game, and otherwise she doesn't talk game. I'm telling you, go back and watch any Denise strategy conversation. It's always a one-on-one conversation, like, on the beach, and it's never a group conversation. It's never anywhere else. It's always, ever since the merge, it's always been this one spot on the beach, one-on-one, usually with Kim, sometimes with Jeremy, sometimes with other people, but it's always a group comes to a decision, and then somebody goes and tells the plan to Denise on the beach, one-on-one.
Well, no wonder they feel like she's an attainable vote. You just got to make sure that you catch her at the beach and you're golden.
It's so weird. Malcolm has been talking a lot about how, like, Denise, she made this crazy big move against Sandra, and now she's going to sit back as much as possible and try to blend back in and play a more low-key game for a few rounds. And so maybe she's just like, you know what? No game talk unless we're at my spot. That's it. And only one person at a time.
Yeah, she's like being Puya right now in the RHAP sequester committee, just sitting in there waiting.
So Kim says to Denise, hey, I'm ready to go to the edge to make a move. I'm willing to play my idol for somebody else. And so, they're locked in. So then Ben goes and explains the plan for Jeremy, the Jeremy plan to Sarah, who is annoyed about the vote changing. She's like, I thought we decided on Kim. Tony comes and talks to her. He confirms, he says, and hey, it's cause Jeremy fired shots at my partner. And she was like, who? He's like, you. He came after you. She's like, oh, okay. And so it seems like that's probably why she's okay with the Jeremy thing, that Tony says that Jeremy essentially talked about coming after her. And as we all know, if you come after her, she's going to make sure you understand how much of a mistake it was.
Yeah. I mean, and good word choice, like you just mentioned from Tony, like personalizing the message before pressing send, like he's coming after my partner, you. Like, so... Yeah, I mean, at this point, like, if anybody's coming after you, I mean, it's final 10. So, I mean, it's easy bait to take, you know? Like, Sarah at that point could probably sense that the Kim thing might not actually work. So, might as well. I mean, it's not you, and it's still a good target. So, hey.
Mm-hmm. So Jeremy then is going to go and talk to Tyson. He tells Tyson about his safety without power advantage. I think this makes a little more sense in the context of that secret scene on the family beach when Jeremy says Tyson is the one I trust the most. He tells Tyson about this power. And that's this person we see him telling the power about. Tyson says, you have to stay or we're screwed. And Jeremy says, well, I don't know yet. I don't know yet what I'm going to do. And again, the only way that they're screwed if Jeremy leaves is if it is a 5-5 vote, which means they do anticipate a 5-5 vote at this point. They do think that Michelle is with them. And that's not super surprising that they might think that. Maybe Michelle is playing double agent. She's only pretending to be with them, but really she's with the other side. Maybe that's what's happening. Maybe that's what makes sense. Maybe. So Jeremy says, look, if I leave, I'll be turning my back on my alliance, but I'm a firefighter. I take care of people.
I'm a firefighter. You take care of people.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
Yeah.
I felt like the show really wanted to sell Jeremy down the river a little bit here. I feel like they were like, he abandoned. he abandoned his child.
Yeah, it's
his children. Tyson and Kim.
I mean, it's ultimately a good call. I don't know. I mean, I don't remember if Jeremy ever had an inkling, had any idea of Sarah's advantage. I don't think that he did, but I mean, it's still it's final 10, you know what I mean? And I think it was the last time that he could use the advantage. So there really was no choice for him other than to use it at this point,
So, I do have a question though, talking about like, did Jeremy know about the steal of vote? My question would be to Tyson. Shouldn't Tyson have known about where all the advantages were? Like, he was on Extinction. There's not a lot of incentive for Natalie or whoever sold, you know, because Natalie sold the advantages away. Like, surely they would have just told Tyson where all the advantages were, that surely they would have shared those things, especially once they use their fire tokens. Like there's no use hiding your fire tokens anymore. Right. So,
maybe they're not allowed to, are they not allowed to talk about it? Maybe.
But I would have thought that Tyson would have known where the advantages were going in. But if he did, then wouldn't he have told people? Maybe he did and it just didn't matter. I don't know.
Maybe if he did know and he did try to say something, like the person that actually has said advantage isn't at liberty to say if they don't have to say if they do. So he's sort of just like, he doesn't have any confirmation. So all he can do is just listen to the people that he thinks that he has, you know. That's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, I really want to know. I guess it doesn't really matter. Like, if you think about it, if Tyson does know where all of the bot advantages lie, then he would have known about safety without power. right off the bat. Although I feel like Natalie probably wouldn't have sold Jeremy out. I feel like she would have kept that one to herself. But I don't see why she would have like, oh, I sold a thing to Sarah. Like, why not say that? But maybe she just didn't. I don't know. Or maybe they did know and it just didn't come to anything. Like, if you think about if they knew about all of the powers, does anything change? I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, I kept like that. That was the one thing that I kept going back to. And out of all the scenarios that I was trying to draft last night, I was like, nothing matters. All that really matters is how Kim decides to use that idol. That is the only thing that has any kind of like power in who was going to like go home. So advantages be damned.
Yeah. So Sarah and Sophie then discuss the steal a vote. Sophie says, hey, there's only five of us. There's only five of us. I would prefer if Sarah plays the steal a vote because if all five of us vote together, if all five of them vote together, that could mean trouble. So Tyson, Kim, Jeremy, they all expect five votes for them, including Michelle. And Sophie and Sarah are talking about five votes as well. Sophie saying we have five. They have five. They're saying that it's five versus five, which is what the show portrayed it as, but doesn't make any sense given the outcome of the vote. And so a lot of people have been saying, surely Michelle was with the Sarah-Sophie group all along. But this scene really seems to dispel that notion, at least at this point. Certainly there's a chance that later after this conversation, Michelle approaches them or they approach Michelle and they get a sixth vote. But if that's the case, then they, first of all, don't need to play the steal a vote. I don't know. So, again, it's a lot of stuff here to say that it really was 5v5, at least for a while, at least when they made the call to use the steal of.
Yeah, I mean, there would have been no reason for them not to if she was with them. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Because No, Taryn, you're taking me back to where I was last night, and I don't want to.
There's
go back
a lot
to that
of confusion. There's going to be a lot of it doesn't make sense. That's what there is no way out of this scenario where somebody didn't do something irrational. Make some kind of mistake.
Have we been made aware of where the votes went yet, like yes. Officially or no?
So
we have. I haven't seen that. I've just been like in the dark.
Ultimately, the vote was 5-2-2. Five votes on Tyson. Two votes on Denise, one from Sarah and one from Sophie, and then two votes on Sophie, one from Tyson, one from Kim, meaning Michelle was a vote for Tyson, one of the five votes for Tyson. And your face is correct. That's very confusing.
Wait, so Sarah stole a vote, used one of them on Denise, the other one on Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
Sophie got votes from Kim and Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
Tyson got votes from the rest of that five plus Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
So Michelle. Genie.
Yeah. It's confusing. So
she has to be playing both sides and then just at the last minute made the ultimate decision. Maybe Jeremy leaving her group in the dust made her want to be on the right side of the vote.
There's a lot of confusion. Let's quickly set up how the vote gets there, because we'll head to tribal. Michelle, right away. Whispering starts happening. And so I tried to pinpoint anything here. Michelle at one point asks Kim, what do you want me to do? Jeremy and Sarah both signal Jeff when he calls for the vote. It's time to vote. Jeff, They both signal at the same time. This is a great moment. I thought this is funny. You go. No, you go. And so, well, ladies first. No, I'm good. I'm good.
Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And we're back. So let's get back to the show. We have the standoff between Jeremy and Sarah. I thought it was hilarious. Jeremy eventually is just like, all right, here we go. I got to just play this. And so he goes and he plays his advantage. And Tony's just like, it's not an immunity necklace nullifier, is it? You're not screwing me here, right?
Valid question.
Very valid question. But no, it is not. It is a I'm a bounce. That's the power. And so that's what Jeremy does. He leaves safety without power. And that causes some chaos. Immediately, as Jeremy is walking out, you see Tony start counting. And more whispering starts, and Ben goes, "What happens now?" And so then we see Sarah, or Sophie just go, Hey guys, why don't the five of us just go and make a decision? And again, it's like, she was talking about there being five in confessional to Sarah. And now in tribal, she says, us five, let's go make the call. It really feels like she thought there were five of them, but maybe she was pretending. Maybe there was something that happened after that confessional and after that conversation with Michelle, where they agreed on some kind of elaborate scheme of her pretending to be with Jeremy still, but really not, or whatever. Or maybe Michelle changes her mind. We'll talk about it. But Jeremy's now gone. Those five get together. They talk about what they're going to do. And we hear Sophie say, so we're all writing that down.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that means. That seems to imply that they're all voting one way. Yeah. And that perhaps her and Sarah had agreed beforehand to use the steal a vote and Sophie's vote to put two votes on somewhere else. I don't know. But then we see Sarah play her steal a vote on Denise. Then they go to votes. Jeff's got the votes, and Kim is not wasting any time. As soon as Jeff walks back in, she's already pulling her bag out.
she was ready.
It's like, I got this. Hold on. The whole, hey, hold up, Jeff, is played out at this. Let's just get over the formalities here.
I like that. I like that.
I've got to play this thing. She walks up and she's like, she looks back.
Oh, Kim. I just love to watch her mind work. She was really trying to figure it out.
I'm going to play it on Denise. On Denise. Nick did look stressed when she got up there to play the idol. Like this could go wrong. Like maybe he didn't know about a vote split. I don't know. It's pure speculation. But it's a 5-2 vote. It's Tyson that's gone. He says, see you guys soon. And then he walks past the bequeath station and he just flips it off, which was the best reaction.
Yeah, it's lucky to see him go again, especially like he just got back in that game. Like he survived, what, two votes? He survived two votes? One vote? Two votes.
It was Wendell and Adam.
Yeah. So to go right back, I mean, he's still another shot. There is still another shot. And if Tyson is the one that comes back again, he would have much more of a case to win, more so than what was his name, Chris. So hey, it's not over yet. It's not over until the fat lady sings, or in this case, until Jeff reads the results via Zoom chat. I don't know, but hey,
there you go.
Good game, Tyson.
So I want to try and understand this vote, right? So there are a lot of different ways to look at it. So I'm going to try and run through the different possibilities, because we still don't know. And honestly, we might not find out until finale night, because there might not be an explanation for it in the next episode. So theoretically, let's say that everything in the episode was true. That we heard from Sophie, we heard from Sarah, we heard from Tyson, we heard from Kim, we heard from everybody multiple times that they were five, that each side was counting five votes, that no one side anticipated having a six vote majority. Let's assume that's true. And that they are putting all their votes on Jeremy. Then Jeremy leaves. And so now it's 5-4. But obviously, they had a vote steal. So assuming it was 5-5, they had the vote steal, they were going to play it. That would have made it 6-4. And they probably at that point were going to put all of their votes on Jeremy. If this is the scenario, but Jeremy leaves. And so now it's 5-4 and they are still going to use the vote steal, to make it 6-3. And so you would expect at this point that the vote would be 3-3-3, that they would split the votes, 3 on Tyson, 3 on Denise, and then 3 would come on Sophie from Michelle, Tyson, and Kim. And then if Michelle decided to flip, or whatever happened, that the vote would have been 4 on Tyson, 2 on Sophie, and 3 on Denise. But that isn't what happened. What happened was there were 5 votes on Tyson, 2 on Denise, 2 on Sophie, which doesn't make a lot of sense. So the only explanation that I can think of is either they just weren't really maybe they weren't planning on splitting the vote heading into tribal. And so when Jeremy left, they didn't really think of it. Until too late, like they didn't think like, oh, we have the votes to split now. And then maybe independently, both Sarah and Sophie kind of thought, well, maybe if we throw a vote on Denise, or maybe they talked about it and they were like, well, let's just throw a couple on Denise just in case. And they were doing the math wrong or something along those lines. But, you know, they would have had to mess up pretty badly to not split it 3-3-3 if this is the scenario. Right. So this is hard to account for on their part. It's also hard to account for on Michelle's part. Why does Michelle decide to flip at this point if she knows it's a potentially a 3-3-3 vote, or you know, maybe she anticipates that all votes are on somebody? What is her incentive to flip her vote if she's not in with that group? All she's doing is allowing the other side to split their votes correctly, even if they do make a mistake, if she flips her vote this way. So like, for instance, let's say that Michelle doesn't flip her vote here. Let's say that she stays with Kim and Denise and Tyson, and the other side messes up their split vote, like they did, where they put 4 on Tyson and 2 on Denise. Now, if Michelle stays with Tyson and Kim, and votes out Sophie, if Kim successfully plays the idol on Tyson instead of Denise, then Sophie would have gone home in a vote of 3-2 against Denise. So Michelle could have made that happen if Kim had played the idol on the correct person. And what makes this even worse is that by flipping her vote, she could have pulled a Tyson from Heroes versus Villains, where by flipping her vote onto Tyson, now, if Kim successfully plays the idol on Tyson and they had decided to split the vote between Tyson and Michelle, then
instead of Sophie going home, Michelle would have gone home because Michelle voted for Tyson and basically burned her vote. Whereas if she had put the vote on Sophie, then it would have been 3 on Sophie and 2 on Michelle. So because like you might think well, she's worried that the vote is going to be split between her and somebody else. And so she thinks that Tyson might be that somebody else. And so she throws her vote on Tyson. But that actually makes her situation worse for her. And so, again, if she's acting rationally, that's not the call she should make. Maybe she's not acting rationally. Maybe she doesn't have time to think it through. And maybe she just panicked and made that move. I don't know, but that's if it was a 5-5 split in the first place, which it might not have been. To add to the confusion here, when we see the votes on CBS All Access, the secret scene with the votes, everybody's voting normally, except for Michelle, who votes Tyson and just goes like, I have no idea. Like she makes a very obviously confused gesture. We can't hear what they're saying, but it looks like she's taking a shot in the dark, which sort of seems to like give credibility to the idea that she was just kind of freaked out, panicked, and did something crazy and that was maybe a mistake. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, even if you think that's what happened, the other side also had to make a mistake and they had to screw up their split vote 4-2 instead of 3-3. And so you have to think of like an entire group of people making a mistake and Michelle making a mistake in order for this to work. And so this is hard to believe, but it's certainly possible that this is what happened. But there's another whole timeline that we can talk about. But Aman, what do you think of all that?
Oh, that was a. That was the inner machinations of your mind. That was a lot to follow. I don't know. I wonder if it's just because if I'm Michelle and I'm sitting there, and do I know about Jeremy's potential advantage of leaving? Like, I don't think there was anything leading up to that in the edit that would suggest that Michelle knew that Jeremy was going to do that. And so when he does leave, and then you're like, okay, now we're at 5-4. And then Sarah decides to use that advantage, taking another one. So now you're at 6-3. And you're under the impression that the next big target behind Jeremy is Tyson. Is it a moment where you... Am I granting too much credit to Michelle to think that maybe she just thought in that time, well, this is a moment to get Tyson out, even if I wind up in the minority, because I can just explain away this vote in pure confusion? Or is she that much of a fan that she might have an idea? No, because there was no way that she knew how they were going to vote for Denise. I don't know.
And there's no way she would have known that they were voting for Tyson unless it was a complete shot in the dark. So like she's, if this is the case, she's throwing her vote away, which has a high likelihood if she is like the only reason she flips is if she's worried that she's the other person that the vote is splitting on. Right. And if that's the case, then she's throwing her vote to somebody else in order to get them voted out over herself. But she has to take a shot in the dark because she doesn't know who those votes are falling on. And again, even if she is correct and is not just completely throwing her vote away, that still might be contributing toward her voting herself out of the game if the idol is played correctly. So it doesn't make any sense from any direction here for her own self-preservation, apart from maybe she thought that that like she can get in with that group if she switches her vote at the last second. But again, like the risk there seems unnecessary in the sense that it puts her in danger.
Do we think maybe there was a thing with Kim where, because when we see the 5 people go off, right, and they decide who they're going to vote for, and I guess in some, let's assume that they probably were going to vote for, because it was what? It was Sarah and Sophie voted for Denise, correct? Mm-hmm. The rest of them voted for Tyson. Was there a thing where, because the 4 that were left out of that, they're sitting there talking about what are they going to do? They had, like, Kim was like, I need to know who they're voting for, because if I know who they're voting for, then we can throw votes on Sophie, get her out. Do we think maybe there was a thing where Sophie... No, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, and like Stefano asked, what if she didn't know about Kim's idol? That's maybe possible. That makes it say like a little bit.
No, she knows about that idol because Kim was like yelling up and down the beach, I will play my idol if I need to. Like,
I mean, we never saw her say it to Michelle. And so maybe she didn't.
She did know because Kim says during when the five goes away, she's like, I need to know who they're going to vote for so I can play it. Like, why would she need to know who they're
right?
Vote
no, you're right. You're right. Yeah, she definitely knew. She definitely knew. And if she knows, then she knows that again. Like Lawson says, like if the vote was split between Michelle and Tyson 333, then you know you might. I can see a scenario where Michelle thinks that the logical move is to put a vote on Tyson to make it 4-3-2, and so Tyson just straight up leaves, and she's not in any danger in the revote. But as I explained, that's like if she has probably another like minute to think about it, she probably wouldn't do that. But I could see a scenario where she thinks that is the right move in the moment, not a lot of time to think. But still, it doesn't make sense why the vote was split in the way it was from the other group. And that's five whole people who had to agree to a 4-2 split instead of a 3-3 split. And so that leads to the other timeline, the timeline where you can try to make some sense of these decisions by saying Michelle was with them all along. And if Michelle was with them all along, then it was a 6-4 vote to start the night. And so Sarah probably had planned on using her steal a vote to steal one of the four's votes to make it a 7-3 vote, where probably four votes would go on Jeremy and three would go on Tyson. And then, you know, one of those two would go home. But then Jeremy uses safety without power and bounces out of there. They have to reformulate. So now they're in a situation where it's 6-3 by itself because Michelle is with the five and now there's only three on the other side. And so then it makes sense why they would, if using the steal a vote, why they would leave two votes on the other side, because they know that there's only two votes, Tyson and Kim. And so in order to split the vote, they only need two votes on the other side. And it makes sense why Michelle would vote for Tyson, because she was voting with that other group. But there's still some inconsistencies in this timeline, because when it's 6-3, they don't need to steal the vote anymore. Why is Sarah even using the steal a vote at all? Because again, you can split 3-3-3. And so that doesn't make a lot of sense. So maybe you use the steal a vote if you don't trust Michelle. You think, okay, Michelle isn't trustworthy. She might vote with us. She might not vote with us, but we can't be sure. So let's use the steal a vote to make sure, which would make sense if they split the vote correctly, which they didn't. They left two votes on Denise, which makes Michelle's vote necessary again, because if Michelle doesn't vote with them, then there's three votes on Sophie and Sophie goes home. And so splitting it with only two votes on the other side relies on Michelle, even though you're using this steal a vote. So it's not that they didn't trust Michelle by using the steal a vote, again, unless they made a mistake somewhere along the line. And so there's just no explanation here that makes sense.
It just has to be the most parsimonious answer, and which would be Michelle just thought Tyson is the next best option, and she did not think about whether or not there would potentially be blowback on her. Because I mean if you're saying in the secret scene that she walks up to the booth and she's just like, I don't know what to do, and then writes down his name, to me that just says, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know that it has to be him that they're thinking about, so let me just help them get him out. And I guess you just figured you're screwed either way at this point. Like, one of your people on that side is going to go home, because you're assuming that they're not going to mess up what they have because they have the majority now.
Yeah. Here's the, like, if you, I think the only through line where people are mostly making correct decisions is if you think that Michelle was always voting with them, and then Sarah used the steal a vote because everybody already knew she had it at this point, because she was about to get up. And so, you know, she might as well play it now because she doesn't want a target on her back. You might think that. And so with that being the case, then they still need to have Michelle be their double agent for whatever reason. And so they get five over there. They're talking about the vote. Maybe they tell Nick, tell Michelle to vote Denise with us, that you know, maybe it was the women vote Denise, the guys vote Tyson kind of deal. And so they were like, Nick, make, or somebody tell Michelle to vote Denise, but then they forgot to tell Michelle, or maybe it was miscommunicated to Michelle and so she accidentally voted for Tyson instead of Denise, making it a 5-2 instead of a 4-3 split. And that's why she was like, I don't know, because she didn't get the message correctly. You can kind of make those pieces fit a little bit, but there's still some inconsistencies in the sense of, like, I don't fully buy the idea that she felt like she had to play it just because it was well known already.
I think more than one person messed up, and that's why it's making it so hard to set. I mean, this is all perfect for Jeremy, because I was sitting here thinking when he left, like, oh, damn, he's going to be enemy number one when they go back to camp. But now they're going to be sitting there talking about, like, who did you vote for? It's just going to be a mess. Like, ugh.
Yeah.
This is... What the hell?
Like I said, like, there's really not an explanation where at least 1-2 people... more likely like 6 people didn't mess up in some degree. And so, you know, it's quite a mess, but ultimately the result is that Tyson went home, and likely Jeremy leaving didn't make a difference. But that's not necessarily confirmed, because we don't know exactly what happened. And again, like, it still doesn't make sense in the sense that, like, why are Sarah and Sophie talking about having 5? Why are Tyson and Kim talking about having 5 if it really was 6-4? You know, again, maybe something happened late. I don't know, but it was very,
yeah, and
very
it doesn't
confusing.
Really behoove. It doesn't really, yeah, like, why wouldn't you? Because if Michelle was with them, I don't understand why production wouldn't want us to see that. Like, why
right?
you would think that that was just going to add more TV moments to the whole thing. I don't.
If Michelle was with them, I think we will 100% see it in the next episode. If we get nothing on this in the next episode, then I have to assume that Michelle just, like, panicked, and they're just going to not show it because she, you know, she's got that at her. I think that is the most amount of confirmation will be either she'll be like, I was in on the plan the whole time and we just messed up our split, or we decided to do a 5-2 split for no reason, or whatever, or it's going to be like, what a crazy tribal, right? Glad I survived. Where they cut out all the talk about, like, I panicked and I voted Tyson and maybe it was bad. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's gonna be like, Michelle's gonna be like, I'm sorry, guys. Like, I don't know what happened. And then because of her confession, she's like, no, I really don't know what happened. Like that.
Next episode, it's gonna be Michelle in confessional. You know, I've been saying all along that I've wanted Tyson out. I don't know why nobody's giving me credit for this. It's like the Wendell one.
Okay, girl.
So that we got this nice moment afterward, where Probst says, you know, hey, you know, the it's jury, it's time to head back to the edge. And Boston Rob says, hold up, Jeff. Thank you so much. And they all run and hug him. And this is a great moment.
Really, really, really cool moment to see Jeff sort of like break character in the middle of a tribal council. And it was such a sweet moment all around. It was definitely within my like top 20 episodes of Survivor, solely for all the stuff that we got this time.
Yeah. We did get one more secret scene with Tyson heading to the edge. This is pretty funny. He walks over to everyone at the edge.
Thanks for sending over all those advantages, guys. That was great of you. Thank you for that. He tells us that he was scrambling for 9 days trying to stay alive. I feel like we were undersold. I feel like, you know, we never really heard Tyson's name as a real option over the last few episodes. I feel like it probably was a lot more of an option than we were shown. You know, Tyson also seems to, even though he was voted up for a second time, seems to be having a pretty good edit right now. And so I feel like I feel like we did not see a lot of the targeting Tyson stuff, but he says that he was scrambling for 9 days and that this was like dire circumstances for him the whole time. Which I think makes a lot more sense given how he should be a target in that spot. So that just seems to be more confirmation to me that, that there were more target Tyson talks. He says, well, you know what, winning my way in a second time will be twice as nice. It's if I do that. And he says, if I win my way back in again and then I win my way to finale, I will 100% win the game. And I think he's right.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think he's completely out of this. Like, and if he gets in again, I mean, that's a hell of a feat. I mean, you can't really make the argument, oh, well, he got voted out twice and, you know, he was out of the game. But like, no, he was in the game and he was still playing when he was on the edge. So it's, you know, I see a path. He just has to win again.
He says, in the meantime, he just needs to find out how to get another jar of peanut butter.
Yeah. you know what? Like, when I was on This Week in Survivor History a couple weeks back with Jordan and Rob, and I was like, do y'all, like, I always question why people go for peanut butter. Like, peanut butter, of all things, like, why wouldn't you want, like, a shot, like, to get back in with your tokens? Like, why are you spending on peanut butter? And then when I, like, ran out of food because of quarantine and didn't go shopping, and, like, all I had was, like, a little, like, some bread and some peanut butter, I took a spoonful of that peanut butter after not eating for, like, 5 hours that day, and I was like, oh, I get it now. I understand. I was starving that day.
Well, we're going to head over to the Legacy Watch soon. I do want to say, though, just to cue this up very quickly, I said this before, that you can still vote in the survey for the Legacy Watch. It's on my Twitter, @ArmstrongTaren. There are actually a lot of very close votes this time around. So if you guys want to break those ties or close votes for me, that would be great. If not, that's fine. But feel free to head over there. Your vote very much makes a difference in a lot of these matchups here. So feel free to go in and vote right now. But before that, I want to talk about Tyson and, you know, Tyson talking about he will win the game if he makes it there. I feel like when I was on the preview podcast with Rob, I talked a lot about how I felt like somebody who came back from Edge did have a good chance of winning the game because of how Edge works. And I feel like there was a lot of pushback on these are winners. Winners will not reward somebody that comes back from Edge. But I disagreed. And I still disagree. I feel even stronger in my disagreement now because I do think that Tyson is correct. I think that if Tyson is in the final three, he will 100% win the game. I think that a lot of people from Edge, if they make the final three, will probably win the game. Like, can you imagine Ethan, Parvati, even Boston Rob? Like, I think that these people can win the game if they make it there. There's already like a crew, an Edge crew that's formed right on the Edge of Extinction. They're all friends with each other outside of the game in general. But especially Tyson, I think Tyson more than any of them at this point, if he did win a second time back into the game and then made the final three with all of his friends in the jury with that kind of story, I do think he will win the game. And so the question becomes, it's something that I've been asking for a few weeks now. It's a little bit less relevant now that Tyson was voted out again. But if the winner of this season is somebody who was voted out and came back via the Edge of Extinction, how do we feel about that win? Because winning the all winner season is the ultimate prestige, and winning having come back from Edge seems to be like the opposite of that. So how do we reconcile these two things? I asked on the survey this week, if a player comes back from the Edge of Extinction and wins,
How will you feel? Either they're a perfectly valid winner, nothing against them. Second option, depends on the person and the circumstances. And third option was edge is a joke and so is their win. It's not valid. And so I was very curious because I feel like I've seen a lot of mixed response on this. So Aman, first I want to ask you, how would you feel? Do you feel like, just first of all, like the blanket question, if somebody comes back from edge and wins, do you hold nothing against them? Do you say it's everything against them, or does it depend on the person and the circumstance?
I think it depends on the person and the circumstance. I do think that there's always something to be said about getting voted out. If you get voted out as Survivor, you've essentially lost the game. Now, you add in some twists here and there. You add in the Edge of Extinctions, which changes elements of the game. So getting voted out isn't essentially losing, but it's still, you are still not in the game. So I think that there's always, you can subtract points for getting sent to the Edge of Extinction. However, with this kind of season, with all of the people that have played already before, where, you know, getting voted out isn't going to be, I feel like people are going to be able to sympathize with you a lot more because not only have they played, but they know who you are and they've been hanging out with you on the edge. And if they can see you make it to the end after being on the edge, like it's just even more so than what happened with the first Edge of Extinction. I just think that this one actually counts because it's all winners as opposed to all newbies that could have potentially been bitter and wanted to see somebody else that was suffering with them win. So yes, I think it depends on the person. I don't think that every edge player is equal. So I would definitely have qualms if some of them won, but it's certainly a possibility. But it depends.
Yeah, I've been saying as well, I agree. I think for me, it depends on the person and the circumstances. I think that, you know, being voted out is going to count against you. But for me, being voted out counts against you the same amount as you would have been voted out if not for lucky circumstances that were outside of your control. Which happens all the time. So like for me, Jeremy goes home here. Let's pretend that Jeremy goes home here in this tribal, goes to edge here in this tribal, if not for having safety without power. He only got safety without power because Natalie got voted out first and she decided to sell it to him early in the season. This is not a one for one comparison here because Jeremy probably plays a different game if he doesn't have safety without power. And so he goes into this tribal because of everything that happened there. But the point is getting across here though. Like, Adam, for instance, on the Yara tribe, he would have been voted out if not for, winning immunity a couple of times in a row, making it to the merge. He would have been voted out on original Cele if not for the swap coming when it did. A lot of other people would have been fine if not for a swap or wouldn't have been fine, without a swap. And so like these are situations that are outside of your control. Tyson was voted out at a point where, you know, the swap didn't come in time, or whatever it was. Like, you can get lucky and get saved or get lucky and get out. And for me, there's not a whole lot of difference. And so I don't count those things differently. It's still a count against you because being voted out is worse, or being almost voted out is worse than not being almost voted out. But I'm not like a purist that says, if you're voted out, you're done. That's it. Like the people that might say, you quit the game, you're excommunicated. Sandra is gone. She left Extinction Island. Whatever it is. I am not an extremist in that way. And so for me, it does come down to circumstance. And I would look at the individual games, when they went out and why, how they came back in and how they managed to get to the end and what kind of case they made to the jury.
You have to do that only, I mean, for the inverse of that as well, because there could possibly be somebody that wins this game that has never been voted out ever, not even in their first season, because some of them have only played once. Like if Kim wins, she will have never been voted out of the game. And that is a strong case. So it really just depends on what happened with your game.
So. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I was saying that I feel like if Tyson made it to the end, I felt like I could feel like no qualms about that win. However, this is the second time Tyson was voted. Even though I feel like he was the third on the target list, and this was, again, kind of an unfortunate circumstance for him, getting voted out again, if he has to win his way back in again, and then likely would need to win his way to, like, if Tyson wins the second Edge challenge and then wins the next three immunities or whatever it is to make it to the final three and then wins the game, I am not cool with that. Like, I don't think that's an impressive win. I think that, you know, like, sure, he's great at challenges. You can give him that. But in terms of, like, impressiveness, I would say not overly impressive in my eyes. If Tyson came back in and then, like, brainwashed the other five winners or whatever it is into letting him get to the end when he absolutely shouldn't be in the end, I would feel a little bit better about the win, but I would still not be as okay with it as I would have been if he hadn't been voted out a second time, like so on and so forth. So for me, it really depends, and I will look at it when it comes. But I want to read the audience response here, that about a third of the audience says, no, under no circumstances can anybody ever win coming back. If Edge is a joke, and so is the win of the person who wins, who came back from Edge, they are a joke. Their win is a joke. It doesn't count. No. About a third of the audience, 33%, says, feels that way. And then about 55%, about 56%, says, agrees with us here, Aman. It depends on the person and the circumstances. And then about 10% says, doesn't matter to me at all. It's part of the game.
Oh, that 10% are leading such stress-free lives.
Right?
Good for them.
I was a little bit surprised, though. Two-thirds of the audience either don't care or are still willing to look past it given certain circumstances or people. And it's only a third of the audience that were really hardliners. I was surprised by that given the, like, what I often get in the chat whenever we talk about this. I feel like this might be one of those, like, silent majority kind of deals.
Mm-hmm. Look, I hear the 30%. I hear you, but the one thing that I always say when people make arguments like that is that you can't say that that's not Survivor when the Edge of Extinction is there, because that is just physically not true. It is Survivor. It's just a Survivor season with Edge of Extinction on it. You can sit here and say you don't like Edge of Extinction, but to delegitimize entirely somebody's win, especially in a season like Winners at War, just because they got sent out, like when production even wants them to be there for the simple fact that they could still win, like it's part of the fabric of the game now. So it's not Edge of Extinction is still the game. It is. It just is what it is. So I mean, I hear the frustration, but you can't divorce it. You know,
how's this for a scenario? Suri gets idol advantage getting out of the game. Nobody votes for Suri, but she is voted out of the game. And then in the same cycle, she wins her way back in like nothing happened from Edge of Extinction. Then goes on to win the game. How do we feel about that? I feel almost nothing about that personally.
See, I mean, it would be literally like Twitter would be on fire. Like Suri would be trending for days and days and days and days and days. And no one would be talking about like that. Damn that Edge of Extinction. You know what I mean? There might be a few still, but I really think that it really depends on the person, their story, what they did when they got back, why they were booted out in the first place. There's just too many variables to just completely be like, to slash it away entirely. Does this make any sense to me?
Yeah. All right. So there we go. I hope that was enough of a stall here to see if these vote totals changed enough. Close enough.
Can I see this at all or no?
Yes, you will be able to see. So let's bring up the Legacy Watch. Here it is. There we go. So this is every week we update the Legacy Watch and we see how the episode has impacted the legacy of each winner In the previous podcast, we had Kim and Tony finally cement their place in the legend tier. Kim had started in the legend tier, but had fallen out, but had climbed back in. She's back on top. And so I will warn you on this one. A lot of movement from this week. A lot of movement. This was a big episode for the Legacy Watch. So let's get started here. We start as always with Parvati, who does remain top dog in the Legacy Watch. Nobody is able to unseat Parvati. There she is there at the top. After Parvati is still Boston Rob, who is the number two. No real movement on either of them at this point. Then after Boston Rob, we have someone new. After Boston Rob is Tony, who is going to jump past Sandra and Kim for the number three spots on the list. Tony in the top three. Top three, baby, for Tony.
That's insane. Really?
I feel like you're lukewarm on this result, Amon.
I mean, Tony? My guys, are we forgetting what... this is called the Legacy Watch, right? So, like, you're supposed to be taking into account the first game, and, like, Tony's game was great in Cagayan, but it was also a mess. And his win... I mean, I don't want to be preaching, but I just feel like his win was
no,
more
go for it.
About, like, somebody else's stupidity. I mean, that doesn't detract from the stuff that he did accomplish in his season. I mean, he got there without even having to win anything, but it was still a messy. If it was for him to be legend, I don't know about that one. I would be fine with top. Legend seems really, really, really much a lot. But okay.
I will say I have been very impressed with Tony this season. I think that he is doing very well on a season of all winners. And I would not contest Tony as a legend at this point. I think that he has proven himself this season in a lot of ways. But I think Amon, I do think you represent. I feel like most of the people I've had on the podcast thus far have all been, you know, Tony fans. And so I do feel like you do represent a portion of the audience that has not been represented thus far.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, I've been watching Tony this season, and like, he's definitely been one of the power players, one of the top dogs throughout the season. I guess, and this was a good episode for him. Like, I tweeted that last night when he won that immunity. I was like, that was the time to win. Okay, so I'm not discounting everything, but I just feel like I feel like I could only ever give him that legend title if he wins this, but we got a long way to go. So I'm just not ready to do that, but all right.
Well, these can be very variable. You know, I could easily
very
see
fluid,
Tony falling out. Like, if he has a bad episode next week, I could see him falling out of the legend. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. He is, you know, he is third, but he is still, like, not too far away from the top tier still. He had a pretty decent jump, but definitely not out of, definitely not solidified. The only people solidified here are Parvati and Rob, and probably Sandra, even though she does continue to drop week to week sometimes.
Wait, so how does this, work? Forgive my ignorance of the logistics of it all. So are there only a certain allotted amount of spots in each tier?
No, it's there's a point range. So, you know, you assign each person legend, top, middle, or bottom. They each have a point value. And if they fall within the range, then they qualify for top tier. And that's how I rank them within the tiers.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yes. So there we go. Tony there, number three. And then number four was Kim. Still just above Sandra here. Kim did fall a little bit in from this episode, but was still able to hang on just above Sandra, who is number five
in the legend tier. So our legend tier has grown. It's shifted around a little bit this week. It's Parvati, Rob, Tony, Kim, and Sandra.
I mean, I think that's pretty solid. Sans one, but all right. I mean, no surprises for me with Sandra. I mean, it's sort of the cemented is the perfect term. It's just sometimes it's just somebody's legacy. Sometimes it's just too great. Like even if you throw some mud at it, it falls down. Like it's just, she's just the queen. The queen always stays queen. So.
Yeah, I don't think Sandra will fall out of the legend tier, but it also wouldn't surprise me if she just like cements, like lands at the bottom of the legend tier, like can't fall out of it, but not a great showing this season. And yeah, and this, not really in our minds because she's not in the episodes anymore.
Right. This season is like it's not the best for her image wise. While I'm OK with what she did, I'm fine. See you. Bye. But I can understand why everybody else is having such vitriol, but I don't think it'll ever, I would hope in this little universe that we got going on right here, I hope that she does not fall below legend status, because then I will have a problem and then I can come back on this podcast and tear all of you and do something. There we go.
Yes. All right. Well, Tyson has been chilling at the top of the top tier ever since Tony graduated to the legend tier. However, Tyson was voted out again, so he is not going to retain the status of top of the top tier. The person who is going to, actually, this is one of the ties that I need to break. There we go. It broke. Just barely, but it broke. At the top of the top tier, Sophie is going to leap over Yule, Jeremy, and Tyson. She had a moderate bump from this episode, and she's going to land at the top of the top tier.
You know, that's not surprising. I mean, she's not a flashy player, and I think her being the first one to be like, guys, let's just decide this vote right now, that was attractive to a lot of people. A lot of people were very happy that she was the one to orchestrate that. So I can understand that.
Yeah. I'm a little bit surprised that Sophie moved up so much. Now, I want to point out Sophie had a small bump from this episode, but she moved forward mostly because the other three that were ahead of her, they all fell. So they all fell behind her rather than her like really like moving forward ahead of them. She did move up a little bit though, and that did help her get ahead. But I'm very impressed with what Sophie's been doing. I think that she is playing a very impressive game. I just wish that I knew more about it. It's just like so many people on the tribe are saying she's playing really well. She's playing really hard. And is that a bad thing? Cause she's a target and she's being targeted. Or is it a good thing? Is she running the show right now? Like, I don't know. I don't even know where her head is at. I don't know what her plan is. I don't know anything. I need to see more Sophie. She seems to be such a vital part of the strategy, and we've seen nothing from her in two episodes, it feels.
Which is such a shame narratively. I mean, it's a shame in general. But it's a shame specifically for Sophie, because I mean, I'm not a Sophie fan. I was not a Sophie fan. Like I said before, way back on the first podcast that I did for this season, I understand that people are not who they are in the game of Survivor, but she annoyed the hell out of me. I find her petulant as hell in her first season. And I was like, why the hell did they bring her back? But yes. with her, now that I have seen the way that she has played with what they have shown us, I'm like, okay, I get it now. All the upside that you have been talking about, I get it. I am so willing to change my mind. But your point is taken about how we don't really get to see a lot of it, yet everybody keeps talking about how good she is. So show us, like, production, show us what Sophie's been doing, because what the tidbits that we have been getting are good. She's been calling people out. She's been naming alliances. She's been in the know. So you should see more of that.
Yeah. And Sophie still has an idol, by the way. The only person left in the game that has an idol.
I forgot about her idol.
Yeah.
So pretty strong position. The only person that I think knows about her idol is Sarah. I don't know if Sarah's told anybody. And also I imagine the reason that Sophie knew to split the votes at all in this tribal was because she knew about Kim's idol, because Kim had gone to her about the idol way back when Sophie said, oh, this was a mistake for Kim to do this. Seems like that panned out. So there you go. Sophie here in the top spot. She actually was tied with somebody else here, but the tie just broke in her favor. So second on the top tier, Yule, who's going to jump over Jeremy and Tyson.
Yule,
who had a brief stint in the legend tier back when it looked like things were going really well for him in the season. He did fall back down to the top tier, but he's still near the top of the top tier. Yule seems, I think Yule has a chance to end the season at the top of the top tier because he's already out of the game. Again, this was not Yule moving forward. Yule actually fell in this episode. He actually fell. So Sophie went up 7/100ths of a thing, 7 points. Yule fell 7 points. But Tyson and Jeremy both fell larger amounts behind Yule. So that's why Yule has landed here at the second spot.
I mean, I don't know because I feel like it's at that point now for me where I'm thinking less and less and less about him. I haven't been doing the legacy watch thing. So maybe if I had been thinking more about like how I actually felt about him in the as time progressed throughout this season, maybe I'd be more for this ranking. But for me, I'm like, above Jeremy at this point. Above Sarah at this point? I don't know. But I guess the audience is really down on Jeremy after this episode. Or after the
It does seem to be that way. It feels like this audience has not been super high on Jeremy in general. I feel like Jeremy has been pretty consistently underrated in the Stockwatch, in the Legacy Watch myself. I can't argue too much with Yule being near the top of the top tier, though. I think, again, he's already voted out. I feel like this is probably around where Yule will settle when all the dust settles. I'm not mad at that. Although I do think there are maybe some other people who should have an opportunity to pass by him if they continue to do well. So after Yule, in the third spot on the top tier is Jeremy, who does pass by Tyson. So Tyson has dropped three spots now, and Jeremy, he fell a somewhat considerable amount from this episode. I think he was on the wrong side of the votes, theoretically, right? He abandoned his children, his alliance. Again, there was that confessional where he's like, I'm a firefighter, I stand by my people, and then he left. I felt like they really set him up there. I don't know why he fell this much, but...
It's the name of the game. Like, if we just got done talking about how we don't want people to get voted out of the game.
Yeah. I mean,
he saved himself, y'all. Like he did what he had to do. He called it correctly. He played his advantage correctly. And it was the last time he could have played it, but still.
I think people are also projecting that, like, yes, he saved himself, but now what? Mm-hmm. It seems like his road to the end, like, especially if you look at last week compared to this week, last week he looked like he might be running the game, like he might be in one of the best spots to win. And this week it looks like he'll be lucky to survive another tribal. And so when you consider that, it sort of makes sense that he fell a little bit here.
I mean, fair point. I mean, I was about to say, like, well, I mean, if he was down and out, he was about to leave. So it doesn't really say so much about his social standing and him saving himself in this fashion in which he had to ditch, well, even lower the social standing that he had before he was about to leave in the first place. So it's like, so I get it. But I mean, still points to me for, you know, another week. All you can do is play this game week by week or cycle by cycle. So in this cycle, it was a win for him.
All right. Well, after Jeremy is, in fact, Tyson, who is going to land here fourth in the top tier. He had a pretty big drop being voted out. I wonder if we'll continue to see Tyson bounce around here as he, you know, gets voted out, wins his way
around
back
the edge,
gets voted out again, maybe wins his way back in again. Who knows? But here he is in still pretty solidly in the top tier, but has fallen quite a bit from the vote out here. Even though, again, it wasn't, I don't think it was really his fault at this point, but it does matter a lot to people that the Tyson vote out. And I will say, like, as somebody who really felt like he had a shot to win, especially in the edit, that getting voted out definitely hurts his shot quite a bit. So Tyson has fallen quite a bit. After Tyson is Sarah, who is going to jump past Denise. Sarah had a small move forward from this episode. I feel like Sarah is also being underrated in the Legacy Watch at the moment. I feel like she has been very impressive all season long. She did make that silly mistake with the reward challenge, but apart from that, I am like, if I'm looking at the board, Sarah is in the best spot and it's not close. She's tight with Ben. She's tight with Sophie. She's tight with Tony. She is the centerpiece of all of those disparate elements that ties them together to her. They all seem to be most loyal to her above anybody else. And that's insane. And on top of all of that, she's not the target. Sophie's the target. Tony might be the target. I don't know. But she's not really being talked about as a target. Adam wanted to target her. Apparently at one point the vote might have been on her, but it didn't land on her and it wasn't on her like this week. And so I'm very impressed with where she is right now. I would have bumped her up a little bit more from this episode. She is going to survive this vote. Although I still don't know if she played her steal a vote correctly or if they split their votes correctly. But she seems to really be in the driver's seat right now, for the whole season. And I think she absolutely could win the game.
Yeah, there really isn't anybody else that has, as solid relationships that she does. The only person that I really could say that might come close to that would be Sophie, but then like you just said, she's the target, so it just sets her up just really well. I mean, her being with Tony is like such a good boon for her game. Like it's just he is such a big target, but he is also willing to get his hands dirty, and so is she, and people are always going to look to him before they look to her. That's just always how it's going to be, and it's just such a good spot to be in. So good for her. I mean, Sarah was somebody who I wasn't too keen on either, but the entire season, really, she's been playing, and she's being a little flashy too, which is always good to have in a winner. So
yeah,
I agree.
All right. So after Sarah is Denise, who is going to stay in the top tier, but she fell pretty considerably actually this week. Denise has been falling. Basically, what happened with Denise is that when she took out Sandra, she had a massive spike. She started in the middle tier, had a massive spike into the top tier. I think she landed at the top of the top tier. Ever since, every single episode, she has been dropping in medium-sized chunks, falling down the top tier list. And now she is actually approaching the line. She is, if she drops the same amount next episode that she did this episode, she will fall into the middle tier again, is a little bit surprising to me, considering I think she's doing the correct thing right now, in really like staying under the radar after the big move she made.
I was about to say, I'm sort of surprised that she's in the top. I mean, I get it now because obviously she's one of the last remaining players left. So she's in our faces. So I get it from that front. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if she continues to fall only because of the fact that even in her first game, she's a very low key winner. And it's not in like a flashy way. It's like her first season, she had to deal with so much. She had to deal with so much, and she pushed through and she made it, and she had to even fight to the tooth and nail to get that one, like some of those votes from like the most crazy players like Ad Maria. Like, oh my god, like she just dealt with a lot. And so I feel like she's regressing back into that stage where she's not the person that's in everybody's ear. Like, we just talked about her just being on that one spot in the beach this whole episode. So I wouldn't be surprised if she continues to fall. Because at the end of the day, you're going to want a winner that's like, if you're going to put somebody in top or legend, it's because they are out here. Like, and she did it with Sandra, but that might be it. Unless she does it with Tony. If she does it with Tony, then bitch. Give her all the roses.
One of the interesting things for me, I think, has been how often the Legacy Watch corresponds with like how the players are viewing the other players in the moment, right? Like, mm-hmm. when Denise made the move, everybody around her was really respecting her. But as their perception of her target level has gone down, the Legacy Watch's perception of her legacy has also gone down. It's something that I notice happens a lot. It happens in Big Brother. It happens in Survivor. I feel like the audience really takes a huge cue from the other players around them. Like, confessionals where you are talking about somebody else and how good they are at the game, I think are one of the biggest markers, one of the biggest and most influential parts of that person's legacy. And I'm very curious to see how that corresponds. I am giving the data to Christina, who does a lot of cool statistical stuff with the Big Brother Stockwatch data. So hopefully she can help us make some connections in that regard, but we'll see. All right, so into the middle tier, we still have Natalie at the top of the middle tier. Has not moved in a long time. She went down a little bit, but not really much at all. Then after Natalie is Ethan, still, who also fell a little bit, but not too much. After Ethan is Michelle, still in the middle tier. She fell a little bit from this episode, but still solidly in this spot. I feel like, you know, I still don't know what to make of her game this season. The edit has been weird, but I feel like this is probably the right spot for her at the moment. After Michelle is, oh yeah, this is one that changed actually. But it changed to where it was before. Adam is going to be there after Michelle, staying where he was last time. He did fall a bit, but not too much.
I have been such an Adam fan this entire time, and it has been the most exhausting experience of my life. That's all I'll say.
Adam was in the bottom tier for a few weeks leading up to his elimination.
Oh no, I would never ever say that. Now he has been a mess this whole season. A mess. But bottom tier, no ma'am. Mm-mm, I'm not gonna do Adam like that. I'm tired of that kind of slander. Mm-mm, let's not play games.
Mm-mm. Yes, when he was voted out, he actually had a big spike up back into the middle tier, and he is retaining that position. It seems like Adam is going to with that final tribal performance has solidified a spot in the middle tier for now. Yes. So there you go. Then after Adam, we have Wendell, who is just chilling there at this spot, hasn't really moved a whole lot. And then after Wendell, we still have Nick. Now I will say Adam, Wendell, and Nick are like within 0.03 of a point, within 3 points of each other. Like very, very close. They have been like, they flipped around. When I started the podcast, Wendell was ahead of Adam. And then when I asked you guys to break ties, Adam pulled ahead of Wendell just slightly. So, and Nick is right behind Wendell by 1 point. So, they're all very tightly, competing here at the bottom of the middle tier.
That's interesting to me that they're so close. So I consider Nick to be, well, we don't got to talk about it. But
what you consider?
I mean, I guess if he were at the bottom, he would definitely be above Ben. So I guess he'd still kind of be technically right next to Wendell. But hey.
Okay, then we head down into the bottom tier, and at the top of the bottom tier, still Ben. He started at the bottom of the bottom tier and has been slowly climbing his way out of that hole all season long, and this episode saw yet another small increase from Ben. Ben is now within 8 points of breaching the middle tier. He went up 5 points in this episode, so he is within 1 to 2 episodes potentially of making the middle tier, which I wasn't sure was possible considering where he started this game. He started in, let's see, at the before the season started at all, Ben was at a he has climbed now 45 points total over the course of the season, and is now only 8 points away from cracking that that middle tier.
You know, I don't need for Ben to be in the middle tier. I think he's fine where he is, and for those of you that are trying to up his game, you know, after that abysmal, well, what are we going to do now in front of everybody at that tribal council, he should stay right where he is.
I wonder if there's going to be like a pushback now on now that he's so close. we'll see. All right. After Ben is Amber, who is going to get back ahead of Danny. Amber and Danny really tightly competing for the bottom spot. But Amber is going to push past Danny just slightly, and then Danny down there at the bottom. And that is our legacy watch.
Wow. Well, this was fun. I did not know that you guys were doing this. I'm gonna like go back and watch all of the other ones so I can see the progression up until this point.
I know, right? I'm excited for like to like chart it out at the end. See how things changed. All right, so there we go. I don't even know if I was correct in that this would be a shorter podcast because it's in two parts.
We went on for some time.
I think we still cracked 2 hours. I think we did.
That vote was really it was a lot. It was a lot to break down with that vote. So
yeah. All right. So that's what we have. Thank you guys so much for joining us this week. This was definitely an interesting episode to talk about. I really hope we get a lot more in the following episode. If we just don't revisit this vote, like, I really feel like the entire season will be shortchanged. Like, we need to know why things split the way they did, because if this is going to be the struggle of the season, we just weren't prepared enough. I don't care that you didn't have enough time in this episode. Like, that's fine. You should have given us more leading up to this episode so that when we saw very little in this episode, we had the right context heading into it to understand why things happened. So that's how I feel. But we'll see. I really like this episode. Like, I did love the family visit stuff. The strategy portion reminded me a lot of Game Changers, and that is a bad thing.
Yeah, I know. I really feel like it's that we're going to get an explanation. I just, the way that they, because I mean, I feel like production's aware of that as well. I think that they're aware that, oh my God, there was so much content for the families, and they had to stitch together as much as they could from that strategy talk. We have to get some sort of breakdown, especially with the whole thing with Jeremy leaving. Like, that's going to be the impetus for it all, you know, because they're going to want to confront him about that, which is going to lead to them talking about what happened. And so we should definitely get some clarity about what's going on.
Yes. Also, somebody asked me who's on my shirt. It's Bong Joon-ho, the director of Parasite. I have a shirt with his face on it.
I watched that like 2 weeks ago for the first time.
Oh, it also has the house in it. It's a pretty cool shirt.
Oh, shit, it does. Nice.
All right. So thank you guys so much for joining us this week. I'll, of course, be back next week on Thursday to run through next week's episode and update this, the Legacy Watch and everything there. So you can find me on Twitter at Armstrong Terran. You can also find the survey there. You can still take it. It closes after the week ends. And then, of course, if you can fill it out before the next podcast, after the next episode, that is very helpful, so that you can have your voice represented in the podcast, and not after the fact, but thank you to everyone who does fill out the survey. It's very, very helpful. And you can also find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Terran Armstrong. Lots of stuff on there, and you know, all the good stuff. Thanks for hanging out. Amon, what are you up to?
You can find me also on Twitter at Amon Adwin, and make sure that you, if there are Drag Race fans, you probably already know, but we are covering Drag Race as well in the wrap-ups. I'm also doing like some cute little BB rewatches. YouTube took me down today, so I have to figure out a way to get around that. But I still plan on doing that, so just follow me on Twitter for any updates about that.
Yeah, speaking of rewatches, I actually started a Survivor Borneo rewatch.
Oh, you did?
Yes, on my Twitch channel on Monday. So Mondays at noon Eastern, I will be watching Survivor Borneo on Twitch. You can hang out and watch it with me. It's a lot of fun. It's Survivor Borneo. Then we got a Survivor Borneo music cue during the family visit, which was very cool. So, yeah. Check that out. Thanks for joining us. I'll see you next time.
Yeah, Terran's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Terran and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.